Welcome, listeners, to another episode of the Busby Babe podcast. I'm your host, Colin Dams, and today I'm joined by Christopher Williams, who started writing for the staff in January, but you'd written a few articles before that. And he's become sort of our resident expert on Man United youth prospects. And you won't be able to see this through the audio recording, but he's got a Donny van de Beek Ajax jersey behind him. So he is surely excited about Erik ten Hag coming in. Christopher, how's it going?
It's going great. I'm very excited to be here. And yeah, definitely excited to talk about the youth after such an amazing win yesterday.
Yeah, they ended up 3-1 winners over Nottingham Forest. It was a bit closer than the scoreline maybe indicated, with two Garnacho goals coming in the final 15 minutes, one from the penalty spot and one he just kind of, you know, won a giveaway ball and made something happen. He's been one of the premier prospects and someone you've written an article about. How excited are you by, you know, not only the showing last night, but the potential of him maybe breaking through the first team sometime soon?
Yeah, I don't even think words can describe how excited I am that we have players as talented as Garnacho in our academy, because this kid, I think, is going to be such a special player for us going down the road. Usually you have some guys come through the academy, they're really promising, and then they get to the first team, and then, you know, they kind of don't live up to the expectations that were set to them. But I think he is going to take all of this and just absolutely run with it. You know, already imitating Cristiano Ronaldo in celebrations, has trained with Argentina and Lionel Messi, and now he's only 17 and has been with the club, I think, for only a year, and, you know, was already, you know, having chances to play in the first team along with some of the other guys. So I'm just so excited for him, and I think he's going to be such a such an important player for us in, you know, 2 or 3 years time when he's a bit older.
He was a player that was brought in from the Atletico Academy, I believe, as part of a revamp that was happening under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to try and increase the talent, you know, just quality level coming out of the academy pool. And it already seems to have paid off, as well as Marc Jurado came from Barcelona's academy. There were a couple other players that came from Spain and other parts of Europe. And now they've put together, you know, the first United team to win the Youth Cup since 2011, which was, you know, a talented team in its own right. Conversely, there is a chance that some of these guys will get a chance with Erik ten Hag coming in. It seems like he maybe would rather have, you know, other options than what the current first team has. And obviously there are going to be players leaving in the summer. You know, I think they're losing at least 4 players for free as free agents. So having this sort of talent pool coming up is really useful for a new manager.
Absolutely. And especially given Erik ten Hag's resume with Ajax, their whole philosophy is promoting the youth and giving them a chance. And I think with this group of guys, it's, you know, it's really a no-brainer to give some of them a go. Alvaro Fernandez, who won Academy Player of the Year, is personally my favorite player in the academy. I started watching him a year ago. You know, I would just come home from class, I'd put on the academy games, and he stood out to me every single time I've watched him. And I think he's going to be a very good left back for us, and that's a position we really need to strengthen. And he's been called up to the first team, he's been in the reserves, he's been in the substitutes for the past couple games under Ralf Rangnick, but hasn't gotten the chance yet. But hopefully, you know, next season he'll continue to get some reps in training. Maybe he'll play in the preseason tour, and hopefully Ten Hag sees something in him. I think that's going to be very, very interesting to watch out for as well.
Yeah, him and Jurado as the two fullbacks, you can kind of see both of them getting a chance under him eventually, at least. I think at right back, there's obviously going to be a hole because Wan-Bissaka doesn't, you know, fit the profile of what Ten Hag looks for in a fullback, as somebody who, you know, can venture forward and make things happen. Diogo Dalot fits that a little bit more, but he comes with his own problems. Whereas at left back, you know, in Luke Shaw, you have somebody who on paper and given the last 3 or 4 years, as he's kind of really come into form, he does fit that profile of what Erik ten Hag kind of looks for in a fullback and somebody who's, good at passing and getting forward and involved in build-up play, but he comes with that big asterisk of having all these injuries. And he had, he had surgery recently to remove the bolts from his leg after the 2016 leg break. So Álvaro Fernández may actually get, you know, some playing time sooner rather than later as well.
Yeah, I'm definitely really excited to see that. And I absolutely rate Luke Shaw when he's healthy on his day. I rate him. And yeah, hopefully Álvaro Fernández can learn from him and, you know, maybe push him a little bit like Alex Telles did when he first came to the club. And, you know, because Luke Shaw's been out of form, well, prior to his injury and prior to his surgery, I should say, was out of form a little bit. So hopefully, you know, that'll be some healthy competition going forward and we'll see who comes out on top.
Yeah, it's been a bad year just for United's defense in general, especially, I mean, the midfield playing in front of them has kind of exacerbated that at times because you watch some of these games and it especially stands out in like the Manchester City and Liverpool games because those are the games that everyone's paying attention. There's lots of eyes on it and you just see how quickly it is for them to move through the middle of the field and take on the back four. But when you see it in games against Brighton or games against Norwich, it's really, really alarming that, you know, these are the midfield options that United are working with. And two of them are going to be gone in the summer with Paul Pogba, who is, you know, has been one of the better creative players for United in midfield. Not so great defensively. And then Nemanja Matic, who, you know, has been the only deep-lying midfielder or true deep-lying midfielder for the past 3 or 4 years now. And, you know, Scott McTominay and Fred have tried to paper over that crack, but it, you know, teams will figure that out eventually.
Yeah. Scott McTominay and Fred they've tried their best and, you know, credit to Fred. He's had his games where he's played extremely well, but at the end of the day, I see them both as squad players. So hopefully Ten Hag can bring in, you know, some midfielders this summer to really bolster that area of the field because the game is won and lost in that. Like we've said, you know, Liverpool and City, they win their games through the midfield. And it's really sad when you see teams at the bottom of the table walking through United's midfield because as Manchester United, that just should not happen. That is unacceptable. And it doesn't help that Nemanja Matic is a couple of years, you know, too old to be playing every game and that Paul Pogba is inconsistent and all of that. So hopefully next season is going to be a new era of United midfield. And yeah, it's something I'm really looking forward to because that's been my biggest grievance with this team for 2 or 3 years has been just how bad the midfield is.
Mm-hmm. So with Ten Hag coming in and, you know, I, as well as philosophy, probably, you know, just in terms of setup and where people are going to be placed to start the match or what their duties are going to be, the midfield's probably going to look a lot different. You'd think they would want somebody to anchor while they have either eights or a pivot in front of them or something like that. Donny van de Beek has been on loan at Everton, a move which now seems like probably pretty regretful, considering he could have gone to Crystal Palace, a team that reached the FA Cup, was it quarterfinal or semifinal? And, you know, has done okay under Patrick Vieira, while Everton under Lampard has just moved closer to the relegation zone. Do you see Donny van de Beek getting more of a chance under Ten Hag, just as a player that kind of knows the system and can help bring other players along? Or do you think he's like a long-term, this is going to be a guy that we'll see in the first team for a while?
Yeah, I think he's going to get his chance, but I don't think he is a set in stone. Mm-hmm. In the starting 11 week in and week out. I was really excited when he came to the club and, you know, for months and months, I just could not understand why Ali wasn't playing him. And then, you know, he would get his games and either just wouldn't perform up to the level that you expect. And I would just be like, oh, he just needs more time. He needs a run of games. And then he would get a run of games, but in like a reserve team.
Mm-hmm.
That just wouldn't help him either. So I was really hoping, I remember writing the article when he was linked to Palace. And I was really hoping he would go there. He could play with Conor Gallagher. He could play with a bunch of, you know, really good midfielders under Patrick Vieira and learn a lot from him. But, you know, unfortunately, he went to Everton, now is injured. But I think that Ten Hag, because he knows Donny, because he knows he can trust Donny, will give him a chance. But I think it might be more of a long-term kind of thing, because if you can bring in, like, Frankie de Jong, for example, who we've been linked to in the past day or so, if you can bring him in and maybe some other players, I think Donny will still be coming off the bench, but he'll definitely be given more time and appreciation under someone like Ten Hag.
Mm-hmm. I mean, with Solskjaer too, we saw a lot of, it was like he had his 11 that he knew he could trust the most, and that didn't really change too much as long as everyone was healthy. Whereas Donny came in a summer where United were trying to buy a bunch of other players that it just didn't work out. Notably, Jadon Sancho was one of them. And it was this weird mix of, you know, maybe Solskjaer wants to try different formations and different ideas, or maybe he's going to be like an alternative for Bruno Fernandes as like a number 10, or an alternative for Pogba as one of the more forward thinking midfielders. And he just, like you said, those chances just didn't really come. And, you know, playing as a deeper midfielder is something he did a couple of times and looked okay, but it wasn't anything special. And that's really been, you know, the area of need for United for a long time now. And it looks like it's going to be again this summer. And like you said, with Frankie de Jong possibly coming in, plays a similar role to what Pogba, Van de Beek would play, and what I would imagine Bruno Fernandes would play as maybe an eight in Erik ten Hag's system. So he could still be a rotational piece, or if we don't get Frankie de Jong, because obviously that's all still speculation right now. Who is kind of a holding midfielder idea that you have for, you know, what can maybe anchor that sort of midfield? Or what are the qualities, I guess, if you don't have a player in mind, of a player that could, you know, hold on to that role?
Yeah, and I'll be honest, it has been Frankie de Jong in my mind for so long. We've seen at Ajax he was able to play in a holding role or even like a box-to-box role and still advance forward, score goals, get assists, do everything you need. Whereas Donny was always able to get more forward than Frankie. Mm-hmm. And I've always been a big fan of Frankie de Jong. And I wanted United to go for him in the summer that he went to Barcelona. You know, unfortunately, we didn't do that. But I definitely hope that that's something we're able to do, because he just has all the qualities in a center midfielder that I like. He's able to hold the ball. He can use both feet. His passing range is spectacular. He can play pinpoint pass, break lines very easily, even though it's something we haven't really seen with Barcelona, especially this season, given all of their struggles and his personal struggles. But I think under Erik ten Hag, he'll be able to flourish again, like we saw when you know, he was that star of that Ajax side that went to the Champions League semifinals in 2019. So I do really think that if we're able to bring him in, you know, he'll be our marquee signing, and hopefully he'll be one of the pieces that really helps turn this midfield around, because it needs restructuring so badly.
Yeah. I was talking with Nathan on the podcast last week. We were doing like a mailbag podcast, and a bunch of questions were asked. And one of them was, well, several of them were about the transfer window, but, kind of like looking for what a successful window would be. And as somebody who has only watched a couple of Ajax games, and basically all of the Ajax games I've watched the past few years have been in the Champions League, so I don't know how much that reflects what Erik ten Hag's usual approach with that team was, but it seems to me like he's going to want midfielders that check a lot of boxes. And Frankie de Jong seems like somebody who just kind of fits that role perfectly. The name I threw out there was Jude Bellingham, just because that's somebody who's been a longtime target of the club. Probably wouldn't come this summer because Dortmund are losing Haaland and they don't like to sell all their stars at once. But, you know, someone who's really developed and shown multiple sides of his midfield game, somebody who can win the ball back, act as, you know, a deep lying playmaker and ball winner, as well as get forward and, you know, make a difference going into the box. But yeah, Frankie de Jong is somebody who's definitely exciting. It's a lot of money, though, that was rumored, something like 60 to 70 million. And you'd imagine Barcelona want to have some sort of return given them the investment that they made all those years ago.
Exactly, yeah. And I'm so glad you brought up Jude Bellingham, because after all the Frankie news today, I totally forgot about Jude Bellingham, and he would definitely be like a long-term option that I absolutely love. But I have a feeling someone like Liverpool will end up signing him, and we'll, all the United fans will be heartbroken.
Yeah. There was that period in like January of 2020. It was like right before Bruno Fernandes came in, where Solskjaer was really high on recruiting Bellingham for the summer and trying to get Haaland in that January. But of course, both ended up going to Dortmund because of that big, you know, agent connection and knowing that, you know, Dortmund are a club where you can grow for a couple of years, show at probably Champions League or Europa League, as well as, you know, one of the top five leagues in Europe, what you can do. And, you know, at the end of that short-term contract, you have a buyout clause that you can go to basically whatever big club you want. So it's really disappointing looking back in hindsight at a lot of, you know, moving windows or moving doors. I don't know what the expression is. Anyway, things that could have been different.
Yeah, moving pieces.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. So in terms of striker, at the beginning of the season, it kind of seemed like that was United's deepest area. Maybe not just center forward, but just forwards that play on the right and the left, Marcus Rashford, Jadon Sancho, Anthony Martial. And now for several reasons, that room has been depleted. Cristiano Ronaldo has another year on his contract, so he could come back. Edinson Cavani is going to be out, and he really hasn't played that much since injuring his Achilles again back in November. So what are the kind of forward options that we think Erik ten Hag would go at? I think Sebastian Allaire has kind of made headlines for the role that he plays in that Ajax side. Not that he would be somebody United target, but that kind of forward that can facilitate play as well as get in the box and finish things. Are there any up and coming strikers that have caught your eye in Europe or Iberia, where you're currently located?
Yes, and I am going with a striker in Iberia. I'm going with Darwin Nunez. Okay. I think he's basically like a younger version of Edinson Cavani, in my opinion. And I've watched him only play in the Champions League, but the matches I've seen him play, he's been unreal. He's been fantastic, and he's really young. And I am actually pretty happy that United missed out on the Julian Alvarez deal, which we were linked to, I think, back in the winter. Mm-hmm. Because that leaves Darwin Nunez, you know, for the taking now. And I think he's going to be not like as good as an Erling Haaland, I mean, as of right now, but he has similar kind of qualities as well. You know, he's just so tenacious, always finds a way to score. Can hold up play, can pass, is always looking to get on the ball, moves in between the channels. And, you know, similar to an Edinson Cavani as well. So I always loved when Cavani was in the team. I thought he was our best forward option, specifically last season. And if we could be in a younger version of him, you know, as a long-term option, I think Darwin Nunez is definitely the player that I want to bring into Manchester United if I'm Erik ten Hag this summer.
Yeah, he's had a good year at Benfica. You know, despite losing, I think he showed in the second leg at Anfield of that Champions League tie, you know, he's capable of, you know, finding the net in big moments. Somebody who also probably comes with a hefty price tag and is also in Iberia that I've been thinking about is Alexander Isak, who hasn't had that great of a year with Real Sociedad. So maybe that knocks down the price a little bit, but would also, you know, obviously knock down the interest a little bit. And somebody who I think is a little bit older than Darwin Nunez. I think he's like 23, 24 now. But yeah, he stood out. Sorry. There's yard work going on outside.
No worries at all. But yeah, I'm also, I used to be quite a big fan of Alexander Isak. And yeah, to be fair, I kind of forgot about him as an option because I think he signed like an extension with Sociedad like last year or something like that. Mm-hmm. And all of my hope of him ever coming to Manchester United kind of disappeared. But yeah, like you've mentioned, they haven't had the best season. He hasn't had the best season. And, you know, that's kind of a signing that, you know, if Manchester United can do it, why not? And he has realistically going to be a cheaper alternative than someone like Darwin Nunez.
Yeah. And in terms of players that are already at United, you'd think Jadon Sancho probably checks a lot of boxes for Ten Hag and is also somebody the club has made a big investment in going forward. So he seems unlikely to depart. But Marcus Rashford, who, you know, a fan favorite who has not had a very good year coming back from injury. You know, he missed the first 2 or 3 months. He scored a few goals when he first came back under Ole, and then things kind of dissipated when Rangnick came in. Is he somebody who you think maybe he sticks around this 1 year, sees what he can do under Ten Hag? Or do you think he's somebody that the club might actually hold firm on, given the value that they see in Marcus Rashford, not just as like a player, but as the person as well. And, you know, what he offers the club in terms of their ties to Manchester, you know, bringing up youth products, all that.
Yeah. And yeah, it's one that's a pain to me a lot this season, because I used to be one of Marcus Rashford's biggest fans, and I still am, to be fair. So it is really sad to, you know, see him not performing up to his standards at all this season, basically ever since that the Euro finals. But I honestly do think that the club should at least keep him for one more year under Ten Hag, see what he can do, see if he can like regain his mojo, his confidence. It just seems like he's all out of confidence. Like he doesn't have the confidence to take on players anymore. And it just doesn't even seem like his heart's in it sometimes when he's on the field. I remember instances where, like, there'd be a loose ball in the box, like a 50-50 between, like, him and the keeper or him and one of the center backs, and he just wouldn't move for the ball. And, the crowd would start booing him and everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it really pains me to see that because, you know, he's our quickest player, someone who lives, breathes, Manchester United Football Club. So it was really painful to see him just not have that sort of love and determination anymore this season. So I'm hoping, you know, get a couple weeks off in the summer, come back to training with Ten Hag, do some individual work, and hopefully he can, you know, get back up to the standards that we know he's capable of.
Yeah, that's been hard to see for a lot of players, because as the season's gone on and it just became more clear how depressing everything was, you know, you've kind of seen those kind of performances come out of players that you just weren't used to seeing it from, you know, players over the last couple of years who always played with a lot of passion and desire. And Rashford especially is somebody who grew up watching those United teams that had Rooney and Ronaldo and Tevez. He always... And one of the things that made him stick out under Solskjaer, especially when he came in, he's an attacker that usually tries to make things happen. And, you know, a lot of times it'll result in giving the ball away, but it also made him one of the best facilitators in the team, especially when Bruno Fernandes came in to kind of balance the load. The both of them, you could get to the point, you know, or last year, you could expect both of them to come up with double digit goals and assists on the season. And, you know, I have a lot of high hopes for both of them going forward that they can, you know, stay an important part of this team. But with a new manager coming in, you got to prove yourself all over again. And that's just kind of the nature of the business.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah, I agree with you 100%. Hopefully stick with him and, yeah, let's just see what happens, because it is really painful to see it right now. But I still have faith that, you know, he can bounce back from this.
Yeah. All right, Christopher, I won't keep you too long, but I see you got another Ajax jersey behind you. Which one is that?
This one is Johan Cruyff.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a Johan Cruyff jersey. My uncle gave that to me for Christmas, mainly because he knows I like Ajax and because I'm living in Barcelona right now. So
yeah.
Yeah, I wear it a lot. It gets lots of comments here.
Yeah. How do you think that perspective of... Because, you know, being a Manchester United fan, in a bit of a Barcelona and Ajax fan as well, would you say that that has altered your perspective on youth academy setups in clubs a lot? Just, you know, kind of the three, you know, brand name clubs when it comes to building out of the academy and training kids up through a certain philosophy and system.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, growing up, I myself was, a soccer player. I played for 18 years. It was always my goal to, you know, try to play professionally. So, I paid a lot of attention to clubs, academies. And whenever I saw a young player come through the ranks, you know, it always gave me belief, oh yes, this could be me if I really put everything I want into it. And now as a fan, as a journalist, I really do enjoy watching, clubs that invest in the youth, that really believe in giving them a chance, because, you know, everyone needs a chance. You can't do anything, you can't achieve anything without just being given at least one opportunity. And that's something Manchester United heavily believes in. That's Ajax's whole philosophy. And we've seen that now with Barcelona, that's their philosophy as well. Bringing up players from La Masia, whether it's Pedri or Gavi or someone of, that nature. So yeah, investing in academies and really choosing players to come up from there to make the first team is huge in football. And I think a lot of teams should really focus on doing that rather than just bringing in players from everywhere all the time.
Yeah, I've been really jealous of Barcelona that they're dip only lasted half a season. It was as soon as Xavi came in, it's Pedri and Gavi clicked in midfield. You know, they, even the players they brought in on kind of, temporary, it seems like a temporary fix, like Aubameyang, they've all worked out. It's everyone is buying into this system again.
It's really fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it is. I've watched a couple of games. I watched the El Clasico where they just tore Real Madrid apart, and that was fun. I'm looking forward to those games being really interesting again.
Yeah, I am as well.
All right, Christopher. Well, thank you for your time, and hopefully this is the first of many.
Absolutely. It's been great having having this conversation, being on for the first time, and looking forward to coming back. Thanks so much.